Josh Warren, my left.
Gloria Fleming.
Doug Ward.
Norm.
Okay, we have a quorum. Pledge of Allegiance, Mr. Allen, would you lead us, please?
I can do that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Added agenda items, anything for you, Gloria?
No, I don't have anything.
Norman?
No.
I have one item I'd like to put on, and that we'll do that at item number 8. And that'll be a clarification of our duties either with Deborah or Mr. Allen.
Or a combination.
Combo is good.
All in favor?
Any comments from anyone in our huge audience? Kitty, you always have something to say.
No, I don't know. Maybe later after.
That's fine. Later's okay. Okay. Everybody had a chance to read the meetings? The minutes of the meeting from May 15th?
Yes.
Any additions, corrections, alterations?
I didn't see anything.
No? Okay, I'll accept the motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I'll so move.
Okay, I'll second.
Any further discussion? No? Vote?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye and aye, passed. Okay, Deborah, you're up. Industrial lands and public facilities that serve them or not.
Let's see, I always forget this. Yes, please. As you know Karen, and Karen's our DLCD rep, and tonight we're going to be talking about industrial lands. If you remember in the comp plan process, we talked about addressing Goal 9, and we did an economic opportunities analysis. And specific to tonight, the kinds of things, or the big overarching goal of Goal 9 is to make sure you have adequate lands for economic development, employment lands, industrial land, commercial land. And specific to industrial land, it's important that you have an adequate supply and that it's serviceable. Because if you have land that's not serviceable, you're not going to be competitive and you won't be able to address the needs. So tonight, what Karen would like to go over, and we've prepared maps, and Scott Perkins has been marvelous in preparing background materials, we need to show if those lands are served with sewer and water and streets, and any deficiencies. We need to talk about those too. What's important to realize for Lapine is that it's hard for Lapine to be competitive. And the reason is, just like many Central Oregon cities, you're off the I-5 corridor. But for Lapine, you're outside of the Bend area. That doesn't make you as attractive as land inside Bend, where people and the majority of people want to live because of the culture, etc. So you have to be more competitive, and you are with pricing, and you are with your labor force that tends to commute to Bend. For example, if you had a manufacturing facility in Lapine, you would be able to attract people who are traveling to Bend and spending a lot of time, materials, and resources on driving there, which degrades roads and causes ODOT and the city to expend more than they really need. So it's good to attract business to Lapine, and you can't do it unless you have your lots served and you're competitive. But always keep in mind, it's going to be tough for Lapine for the reasons I stated. So we want to look for ways to make that more attractive. And tonight we'll be discussing services, and we'll go through the map of what's developed, what's not developed, and Scott has prepared sewer and water connection data for you. And then I want Karen to explain what the governor's office and this project is all about.
So, sorry, I'm filling in some numbers here on a chart that I want to give you. So I am part of what's called the Regional Solutions Teams. And have you guys heard about that program at all? Okay. So the governor decided that it would be really effective if a number of core state agencies were co-located. and I am co-located with ODOT, you guys know Gary Farnsworth, and DEQ and Oregon Housing and Business Oregon, so we're in one place. And as a team, we have an advisory committee that gives us the overriding issues for the region, for the Central Oregon region. And our advisory committee has identified for us that one of the large issues facing Central Oregon is what they are calling a shortage of available industrial land. And so when they came to us with this issue, we decided that we would figure out what that meant. So one of the first things that I always do is that true? Is there a shortage of industrial land? The perception that there's a shortage comes mostly from EDCO, who are the folks on the front line trying to sell property to people, right? People could come to them and say, we want X industrial land. And so EDCO's perception is that there. I think that there's probably a range of reasons why there's that perception there, and some of it has to do with pricing and the available marketing and some other things. But one of the issues, so I've been involved in doing two different things. The first thing I did was go around to all the cities, and Deborah gave me the information for Lapine, and figure out how many vacant industrial parcels there are. And this little chart that I put together has is a summary of what I found out. And all this is raw data. This just shows you how many lots are out there, how many are vacant, and kind of where the big ones are. It's just kind of interesting to see. Now, whether or not that tells us that there is enough industrial land or not, I still haven't been able to discern. So the second phase of the project has had, let me take one step back. One of the motivations for us to drill down into figuring out what this industrial land's problem is that we may have some money. So the Regional Solutions Advisory Committee, if the governor's budget is successful, will have probably up to $2 million to apply to projects that accomplish their goals. And so since one of their goals is to resolve the availability of industrial land in the region, it seems likely that one of their projects, that they may spend some money on a project that would resolve that issue. So as the second phase of this project, I've been going around to the cities and saying, okay, here's your vacant industrial land. Mm-hmm. Why is it vacant? Is it vacant because it's doesn't have some essential services? Does it need infrastructure? Is it in the wrong place? Do you need a different kind of industrial land? So what kind of projects can come out of this question that we can help with? So
at this point, what I'd like to have you do, if you don't mind, and I think it'd be important for us to gather around the work table, and I'd like to show you the map of our vacant and developed industrial lands, and then show you some of the information that Scott Perkins has provided. The reason it's important for you as planning commissioners is because we have to maintain an accurate comp plan. We have a policy in there of updating that every 2 to 3 years, so it's coming up. And we want to be familiar with the kinds of infrastructure that serve the city. Because if you can't develop a parcel, it's not going to be very beneficial to the community. And that's a big part of planning. So it's really important to get a handle of what our inventory is. And it's been a couple of years, so it's a good time to take a look at it. So if you don't mind. Well,
before we go over there, Dustin's going to walk in the door here in just a minute.
Oh, okay.
And I want to make a comment.
Sure.
You mentioned, why has our industrial park, nothing's happened? I think, from what I see, no one has aggressively tried to merchandise the industrial
park. The marketing issue.
The marketing.
Rick is working on a plan to where we're going to have someone hired to do it, and I think that's just exactly what we need to do.
I have a question, too, that pertains to that. I know that was set aside and the lots were established, but how Do we have the flexibility to enlarge lots or, you know?
Sure.
That's...
Yeah.
Because that could be a problem.
Yeah, for example, if it was all located in a swamp, which ours isn't, but let's say it was, and we didn't think that was the appropriate place, we'd make adjustments to the plan to correct that. If we wanted to encourage people to consolidate lots, we can write code language to help with that. If we saw that one lot was not served, we would appeal to the city council to budget funds to extend services to that lot if there was a reason to do that. There are all kinds of things from a planning perspective that we can do to shape and refine our inventories. And like I said, we should look at that every 2 years or so.
Well, I guess are we being hurt by the fact that it's set up the way it is?
I don't think so.
No.
I think when you look at the map.
I'm thinking in the industrial park area, aren't the smaller lots, are you being
hurt? You've got where Biogreen is going next to that. We have four of them that are more than 20 acres.
If you look at that table, you'll see that you guys have,
we have a pretty good inventory.
We have a pretty good inventory of larger lots.
Okay.
Yeah, especially for a city your size. So
let me interrupt for just a minute. Patty, would you make note that Justin has arrived? He's excused from being late at 6:10.
Nice to have you with us. I've seen you for a while. Good to have you.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
So you have...
Why don't you guys, Justin, what they're doing is, she's with the state LCDC, and they want to find out in all the cities in Central Oregon, do we have enough industrial land? Why are companies not coming to our community? If we have industrial land, is it because we don't have enough water and power or whatever?
Right.
So it's kind of a general discussion. We just started into it.
Okay.
So that's her question, is, are the lots big enough?
Yeah.
And
you know what, a lot of it depends on the market that you're trying to attract. And, and look at the city of Sisters. I was there yesterday doing this exact same thing. Sisters doesn't have a single parcel over 4 acres, not one. Most of their parcels are half an acre or 1 acre. Mm-hmm. And that's because they've decided that they are a startup kind of town. They're going to attract small businesses. Part of the problem that they have is their price. Their land is too expensive. It's in small lots, but it's in a really nice business campus setting that's raised the prices probably.
Expensive.
Right,
so. I'm not familiar with the past, per se. What has the city done to market here? Have we done anything?
Well, they had Lee, which is the Alpine Industrial Group, for many years. And so they had that land, and over in the business park, most of that land, or a lot of that land sold. Probably not as aggressive. I think we have the EDCO position going to start probably in August. We funded it in our budget, and I'm actually sitting here reviewing the EDCO MOU between the county or the EDCO and the city.
They've started advertising,
So we'll get a half-time person. They'll be at City Hall. We already got their desk upstairs, and they'll be here. And their whole job is marketing and trying to bring business.
That's great.
So that will make a difference. It'll be more focused. They don't have to just do that in our industrial lands back here. It could be private industrial land and other things where Liggy only technically worked on county-owned land.
Mm-hmm.
And in most communities, there's a lot of land that isn't government-owned, it's private. So they'll broaden. But they won't do tourism things. It'll be more commercial, a little bit of commercial with industrial.
Traded sector.
Traded sector. Yep. So. But I would say one reason why, I don't think we know yet how we're going to do. You have to realize that this was a city not in really till 07, 08. When did the bus start? About 06. And I don't think that should be in any report if someone's ever talking about, why is Lapine not having? Companies don't generally locate in unincorporated areas.
Mm-hmm.
We were not an incorporated city until 2007, but really, you were barely functioning in 2008. There was nobody building a building in any industrial park in 2007.
Yeah.
No one was buying land. They were going broke. Banks were taking land back. And it's just now in 2013 that there's interest again. So and the other thing is you had a separate sewer district, separate water district. You dealt with the county. Any company would come here. We didn't have a city to go to focus in on. They don't want to invest in unincorporated, it's like Terrebonne's.
Right.
They don't just go and invest, they just don't do it. A lot of cities, I mean, a lot of companies just are not locating if there's no mayor, there's no council.
Right.
And so it's only now that we have all those things in place. So, you know, had we had a city in 2000 and during the boom of 02 and 03 and 04, you may have more companies. So I think it's really an experiment moving forward rather than the unincorporated issues that, you know, when they're out searching for cities, they search cities.
Right.
We didn't pop, we weren't one of the cities in the state of Oregon.
No.
That's, that's a really good
CDP.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And I think that a challenge will be to, and I think having the EDCO person here will be fabulous because that perception that there's now available industrial land is coming from them. If they get to know your industrial land inventory better, they won't maybe be so inclined to say that.
Yeah. And they were sent, when you first asked for the data, they were sent a copy of everything that we produced. So
EDCO was?
Yeah, so they have that.
Yeah, they, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, so at this time, if you're comfortable, I'd like to go to the work table and be able to show you a few things and add a few things to your booklets.
I hate to make you get up again.
Did you make it?
Yeah.
Oh, Doug, I'm
sorry.
You want to stay there?
I'm okay. I want to get up, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You want a comfy chair?
I'll ask what she's got.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have another inventory sheet.
Yeah, I'll have to probably have to fill in the missing number. My, for some reason, my Excel program was, I think that this number is 38%. It's not really the one that you need to know, but that was just for your interest.
Did you all get the Scott's report?
It's kind of interesting to see where the lots are,
okay.
Where the big lots are,
it's
and
nice
what percentage
it wasn't
of how large lots are located where.
I think he just did it.
Yeah, we got the doors.
Well, you know, their trouble is too much public.
Okay.
They need some private land, but as far as acres.
So what we have the county do is take a look at what's vacant and what's developed. And this is all of our industrial lands. Blue's vacant, green for go, it's easy. We used a screen with the county assessor's office. Because what does vacant mean? Well, if it has a doghouse on it, it's not vacant. So I put a screen into the county saying anything with an assessed value over $20,000. So that would show a structure that had more than just the typical value. And when you look at this, you can see they put the aerial underneath. So you can see that is developed, this developed. Some of these other ones are vacant or have values. They're just sheds or lean-tos that we just... I'm not going to consider because they're really redevelopable. So this gives you a good idea, including a cutout for some land above or below some road.
Okay, so this is the industrial park.
Correct.
Okay.
Wait, yeah, here's Mid-State. Right?
Okay.
And this is all paved and ready to go. So this is would be cleaner. This is more of a business park type, you know, small companies that you see. These are obviously much larger. And you know, right now there isn't a company back here. If someone needed all of that, you can buy it for tax lots.
Right, there isn't any problem.
But you got water, sewer,
and there's fire hydrants all over.
And do you have any power issues?
There's power. I mean, well, hell, Mid-State's right there. There's a
and sewer's in, right?
So if so
the BPA's close.
This is the question that you ask everybody. So if the data center wanted that
and they actually have quite a few megabucks, not as big as a Facebook, but a smaller data center. There is a substation. They don't have to spend any money.
Wow.
They can buy, and literally it's across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Fire hydrants are in. There's 8-inch water mains.
Yeah.
So.
How about fiber optics? Are you good on
that? I'm assuming they're here. We've got.
Those need to be extended better than they are.
I actually don't know where they are.
Yeah.
But they certainly are around.
Right, right.
Ben brought Banjo through the big act with the feds.
Right.
They brought it to town,
yeah.
And it's in the industrial park,
right.
So.
Okay.
One thing we did examine during the comp plan process was if we took 80 acres out of the big chunk of land that came to us from the county and
mm-hmm.
the BLM,
mm-hmm.
and we put solar generation on that, we would
create
5 meg, enough for the entire community.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a good background document. The key data is underneath this. And I'm just going to shift this out.
Somebody put this, we'll get this up on the wall.
Yeah.
Get rid of some of these others to go to.
So for water distribution and sewer distribution, what Scott has done is show how these lots are served with detailed information. You'll see 12-inch diameter water line. And he'll show the areas that go through the community. He's also gone through and provided in this memo flow tests as well. It makes no sense to develop a parcel if you can't protect it with fire. So typically developers look at fire flows and then domestic comes after that. So if you conserve it with their fire flow, everything else is covered.
You said there was $2 million at state right or for the change.
And we've got these for your packets and for Karen as well.
We
may have to give this to Karen to and
just put a line from here to here. So it's
it looks like he's going to
wait. Let's make sure I get that one within.
I got to bring this up. Is any of this the possibility of an airport?
Well, the airport would be clear back here because this have to be out. How far back is that? 800 acres. Is it over here somewhere? How far back east? It's back a ways, isn't it?
Yes.
Is it a mile or half mile?
It's this way.
How would you characterize this parcel?
It's a challenge.
What's that? This is paved. There's water lines
so the
here,
water line,
and then we'd like to go pick this one up over here and bring
to Walling.
Yeah.
Plain. Okay.
And then what we do is run an aid down. Then that's loop. Then you'd have two sides of that also with water. So you kind of you'd help this, and you would help that.
And these are all totally buildable, right?
Yeah, they're zoned.
Oh, yeah.
Industrial.
That's what I thought.
This would make the fire flow for this much more.
Sure.
Much better.
Yeah. And that's, that's quite a few acres.
Yeah, so that's a lot.
That's a pretty big piece.
So it would be good to loop.
Yeah. So that might be a place we could grab a little money from the state would be to do this line. We're engineering it right now. We'll actually have a good cost down the road here.
Okay. So from this map, can you tell which of the lots Liggy sold? For speculation that are just sitting there vacant?
Yeah. Well, vacant,
they sold
you can tell. Because it says here, developed or vacant. So the greens have something on them. So anything here, you can see the buildings. So,
yeah, I know, but what about the lots that Liggy sold?
It doesn't matter if they're vacant. So some are sold, some are not. I mean, somebody owns them.
Those are residential.
No, this is
a
business park.
They sold it for speculation.
Yeah.
You saw it out
more
of that.
Yeah.
So why didn't she have this on the map?
I don't know why those aren't
colored. Is that this is a different
zone? Well, that's light industrial that's industrial.
But that has been sold.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, but some have it, some haven't, and the fact they're sold doesn't matter. It's industrial.
I just wonder why he didn't show those.
I don't know why he didn't. Because I wonder if that's not our total, then, where our total would be higher, because there's probably another 40.
No, I did your total from information that Deborah had sent me months ago. I think that's correct. I'll have to go back and check to make sure those are in there, but I think because I've got you with quite a number of lots.
That should be shown.
I have you with I have you with 253 lots, or 258 acres. So
sure. But there's a lot of acres.
Yeah, these need to be shown, so we'll correct that. And it's obvious what's vacant, what's village.
Yeah, I thought they were houses from the way it looked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's a.
That's what was confusing to me.
Yeah, because it's not
colored. Yeah.
That's a big
boo-boo. Oregon State Police is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That city, the water district. So, as a community, I say if you actually look at this, and if that was all, basically blue, you've got little ones served. Look at all of them. Lots of little lots. You've got big lots. You've got in between, bigger than these, smaller than these, that are served with roads, utilities, and then here's a huge one.
Yeah.
I mean, I would almost say we have options more than almost any town in Central Oregon.
You do.
If you actually look at this, we're not growing because we don't have enough industrial land.
Right.
And anyone that says that is just It's an easy topic. You know, you look for diversions. You look for, you know. So I think Deborah was saying there's other reasons, and I think we need to focus on the other reasons.
So I use the analogy of I used to do a lot of downtown planning, and it doesn't matter the size of the town you go to or where it is. The first thing you hear from people is there's not enough parking. You always say that. So then you ask the question, well, is that true? And if it is true, you know, why? And it's usually because the parking's in the wrong place or it's poorly managed. So the analogy, so I'm in the phase of asking, is there enough parking? And I think the answer is probably yes, there is enough parking. So,
I'm not seeing any deficiencies. I say we do want to serve this, so if we could, we'll talk about that sometime in the state. But we would like to, right now, we're getting 1,000 gallons GVM, and this would get it up over 2,000 just by adding this line.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And
for the loop. For
yes, because you come in from two sources, two directions.
And is that, do you think that that's limiting the developability?
Well,
it'll be
an issue when someone comes. So
right.
As soon as they
right.
land there,
okay.
they're going to say, ooh, 1,000 isn't
yeah.
quite enough for fire flow.
Yeah, okay.
And this way, if it's there, you know.
That's a barrier. It,
yeah.
Well, that's what we're looking for.
And it could be, we could partner with the state on that, you know, where we dig, it's just pretty easy digging, we could maybe dig and then you guys buy the pipe. But, you know, again, this isn't a huge dollar project, but it would have a nice benefit.
Yeah.
And
so I wasn't even aware of this big one down
here. Yeah. What were you saying? But you said 23K?
Well, no, I don't know.
Somewhere.
I'm saying it might be 50 or, it's not a, it's no $500,000 project
right,
or anything.
Right.
It's
yeah.
you know.
It's
there's no streets out here, so it's easy to, you know, you don't have to, you know,
right.
cone things off. You don't have a bunch of flaggers and other things, and
sure.
you can put her in.
Does BioGreen still have the option on?
Yes.
That hasn't expired.
Yeah.
And what is, are they just still stalled in the courts?
No.
No.
They're trying to get buyers, right?
Yeah, it's not the courts. It's they don't even want to buy their
credits.
Oh, their credits.
Yeah.
So
the California, and it's the Betsy tax credit issue.
I talked to someone today who was works for a solar company who said she thought that California thing issue might be loosening. And I don't know what she based that on, but so.
Oh, hey.
That would be nice.
That'd be good if there's some market, though.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Kitty, this isn't vacant. That's really, you've got. Maybe Sevagan's not structured. Maybe that's what it means. They got log. They have log decks and things in here.
Yeah,
we screened
on
$20,000 value
like
structure.
Okay, so it has stuff, but it doesn't have a building.
Yeah, and that makes
it
okay.
potentially redevelopable.
That's true. It could
yeah.
be.
Yeah,
but it is owned. There is a business there.
It's connected to this, isn't it? Scott, isn't this all
but
Scott?
I think it probably is Scott money. But you know, when you look at it, there's a lot more developed out there than what people think.
Yeah.
And actually
yeah.
that wasn't even developing, but wasn't even Liggy's charge. They were charged with getting the infrastructure in. They had to sell properties to get the money to do the infrastructure. And in doing that, they ended up with a lot of extra money, and that's why we have money to go to the traffic light.
What's the thinking about this person? Who is that?
You know what, it'd be a railroad spur,
oh.
I would bet,
because okay.
the propane's here.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have a spur. I mean, that's one thing,
yeah.
as you well know, you can end this whole railroad issue, but that is, we've got the track, and, you know, spurs are a shortage everywhere. Getting BNSF to stop anywhere,
yeah, I know.
As you know,
yeah.
you fight that.
Right.
It would be great for liquid fuel and propane if we could get a spur for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that, it's a nice thing.
Yeah.
Right now, see, they won't stop. And so, you know, people think, well, if you get a company that will use them, they won't. Well, first of all, they're not stopping on the main line. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to do a spur. So my thought was that this must have been, you would bring
them
on.
Thinking about a spur, which is nice. So
yes.
don't lose it. Yeah.
Well, I know at one point somebody tried to put a spur in and they ran into problems with the county. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, what were we running
that's
there?
Flexible.
That was like,
maybe.
Yeah.
We really had more flexible thinking from the county on
that's
those
good.
Spurs. The O'Neill Junction for Prineville, hardly any process at all.
Well, you asked about the airport. You know, and I if I were at time or anyone's board, you could do it. But I think we need to check it. Because it's one of those rumors, those myths that comes along. Because I had a guy just the other day ask me about it. But I do need to check the one thing out. I've been told, but never myself looked at it. that, first of all, the feds won't even look at an airport within 30 miles of another airport. Mm. Now, Sun River, I don't believe, qualifies. Uh-uh. But the Bend Airport, if you did a crow fly, are you 30 miles? You may be 29 or 28 if you actually just went straight. First of all, I've never checked that out. And number two, I've never actually myself read the 30-mile rule. It does make some sense, but the FAA right now is not. See, all these airports are all funded, basically, the runways. You know, to go build a runway out here to have any impact for industry, just, you know, to bring in, you're talking millions of dollars to build. And the FAA can't keep going what they got. And if you've got airports, that's why within 30 miles, that what I've been told is they won't even consider, maybe it's not even, you can't even do it. They don't
care. Well, at one point, they had the financing for 95% of an airport from the FAA, but they wouldn't deal with us because we weren't incorporated.
Oh.
And that's how the incorporation
came about. Well, but I need to see that. See, everything's a myth.
It's here somewhere.
You know, it's what?
It's a different day now.
Yeah.
Cami has that study that you're referring to.
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, there's, I don't know what all we still have, but I mean,
so
there's a lot.
So they're in the story booth.
That's what I thought.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
Because they were doing surveys on this way back
in the airport, like I, sometimes I say, I wish I had time. That's what I do. Because I think that it hurts the community. You can't chase widgets that aren't going to happen.
Right.
And we spend too much mental time, I think. And I just last week, someone was in here. Well, you know, we had an airport. And I wanted to say, it is not going to help us one job.
Yeah.
But, and so I really, you know, you need to know from a factual standpoint, because I really like facts.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
Can it? And I need to see it. But the airports lose money. If you went out and got a grant, you then have to insure it. They don't insure it. You then have to run the gas pumps. Three airplanes a month land? We can't have an airport without a gas pump. Well, then what are you going to do? So then you put in a self-serve gas pump. You know, all this stuff costs a lot of money. Then you have to build T-hangers to put it. Then you, and ask Ben, matters, snowplow it in the winter. So then you're out there on a big airport runway, snowplowing. If you don't snowplow it, it's closed for months.
It was supposed to be thermal.
See, I mean,
how was that cost?
Yeah,
no,
so,
there was supposed to be a grant on that. It was going to be a new type of runway.
But, you know, so it's...
I know.
So I mean, it's just not.
Things have changed since 2006
and
2005.
And all airports are broke.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you went and actually found out how many jobs or any of these now matters recently because of the retardant plane business and everything, but by and large, you know, they're
that,
not.
That is the reason they're making such a big deal about that is because that's a rare success story.
It is. So airports are really for people who enjoy general aviation.
Well, they were looking at Hunter, you know, tourism for hunters and UPS and FedEx and that kind of thing too. So, and businesses that would build up around the airport. So that was, you know, basically the way it was, you know, and whether it was going to be a port or a city.
Right.
Yeah. Lots of land there, though.
Well, we have land. We'll have land for it someday if it becomes feasible.
If somebody decides they want to work on it. So.
One thing I wanted to talk about is population growth and some trends. And when you look at the growth industries between 10 and 20 years nationwide and how that reflects upon Oregon and then drills down to Lapine, some of the trends will produce things that are related to healthcare and government that will mean some spaces out here. I expect that to happen, mainly because those are the growth industries and we seem to attract people who need healthcare and that's going to be coming. So there's spin-off. There's laboratory work, there are a lot of jobs that are peripheral to that. We'll see more of that. And the same with government more of those things related to agencies and public services. Those are the growth industries along with leisure. So we can attract leisure by providing services to people who are going through Lapine, going out somewhere else. Can we capture those trips? And we've talked about ways in the past to do that, and that has to do with commercial services. Do we have adequate lands for those? And we do. And some of that spins off into industrial. For example, there was a brewery that had a pub in town developed in the industrial area for their big vats. Those are the kinds of things I expect to happen as the population increases.
You're right about medical. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, jobs are.
Yeah. And that's something we're sorely lacking, really.
Yeah. And that's, you know, if we had 24-hour health care, if we had a resource there for people in this area, people would use it, not just in Lapine, but all the periphery.
Cell therapy, too.
You know? Yeah. And you're right, ongoing therapies.
Yeah.
Well,
lack
as you bend, you know, how they, that big area, you know, it's just more and more and more medical services of some sort. So you go to a certain area and pretty much everything you want.
About to try and start to duplicate that model in Prineville now. So they bought the Ochoco lumber site, and that the city has that zoned, or will have it shortly have it zoned as a mixed use district. They were trying to make it into a health district, same as the city of Manistee.
Yeah.
Yeah, medical. I think the lack of, I mean, in here you're not going to have clinics. This is, but she's saying things that go with medical. That's a growth industry. But when you look at, when does some, we have all this, you say, why doesn't someone want to come here? Then it gets down to the age old. Does the business, okay, the business is looking. Do I want to live in the Lapine area? You know, does my family, wife want to live in the Lapine area? Does it have the amenities that I'm looking for as an owner, or the employees I'm going to need to draw? And that is then medical care.
Yep.
Commercial services, mm-hmm. all of those things.
Don't forget the pub.
That's exactly what that's in.
Well, even like rail equipment and that sort of thing,
yeah.
too.
So, all the cleaning supplies that are needed, yeah. cleaning companies.
You know, they've kicked this 24-hour medical thing around for 5-6 years now.
Yeah.
And the main hang-up with it is they can't find a medical provider that's willing to come down here and spend the money.
Yeah.
And BMC used to run the clinic here in town,
okay.
and they finally gave up. And then Steffi took it over, and she gave up. Now it seems like it's doing a little bit better, but you have to have a hospital or a major clinic running. You can't. Nobody's willing to do it.
In the past has been our demographic, because there have been so many people who just can't pay their bills.
That's right.
The medical facilities can't support themselves.
Yeah.
And that's changing. We're getting a more and more younger population.
The only reason the clinic here in town is open today, the only reason, is because they've been declared a rural community clinic.
Right.
And they get, instead of charging $145 for an office visit that Medicare covers, they charge $215. Okay? And that's the only reason they stay in the black. If it wasn't for that,
yeah.
they'd run in the red.
Yeah,
that's
terrible.
Yeah. So I think that you say you've got all this. I think it's these other issues.
Yeah,
is the reason.
Yeah.
In other words, if you say, gosh, we got all the lots, we got cheap land, and we got big, little, and in between, then, but the problem is the reason, again, you have to almost go look in the mirror. These discussions are tougher ones. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you've got to go tell someone that you maybe eat at their restaurant every Wednesday morning, and you have to say, yeah, no. Some things need to look a little different here. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get pushback. It's all of that.
Right.
The clinics, funny, I was with some of the community leaders here just last week, and I asked the question because someone from another large organization in the region that is in medical care asked me about possibility of increasing medical care here.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they were asking me because they said they know there's going to be an immediate no from existing provider. And so I met with a couple community leaders. This is so touchy, I will not say who.
Yeah.
I met with some folks, and it is, they were like, ooh.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, and I just said, I'm asking an innocent question. Is that clinic? Are we saying that from South County, Sun River to Klamath County, that clinic, which is a kind of a government subsidized clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only medical care we feel this area needs? Because still 3/4 or 9 or whatever number, but over half of you have health insurance.
Yeah.
you don't need a government subsidy. You know, you choose what doctor you go to. And so I asked him, I said, do you think people with insurance, school teachers, mid-state people, you just go to MLS, you got insurance, is that the type of clinic that you want to go to? Because I can go to Madras, there's a Mosaic. I do 100% of my doctor work in Madras. I have never been to Mosaic. Mosaic is where people mostly with their health plan go.
Right.
Yep.
That's kind of what this is. And so I'm saying...
Well, all my specialists that I go to are all in Bend.
Yeah. So, so does the community want a clinic that is called market-based? And then we'll all take a look. Now if you're getting into it, I said, well, I won't be here long enough. So, so I think medical care is an issue.
Big issue.
Do you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
That's a very big issue.
Yeah. Karen, these research materials that are the background materials that Scott's provided, do you want these?
Only if they illuminate the project at this point.
Those are specific. Those are just pipes in the ground.
Yeah. These are just
If they illuminate one of, that project would be, that would be.
We can probably do that at different
Yeah, I think at this point the information gathering that I got is, yes, Lapine has a sufficient amount of industrial land. There's a couple of lots that could really be made much more shovel-ready if they had increased fire flow, and it's a small project. We could do that. Yeah.
And we've got incubator space to showcase.
Yeah. But what's really going to be important, I think, is to get Ed Cohen board and start to showcase this off.
Right.
I don't even know if they think about you guys right now.
Well, they should if you're paying.
They've been coming down. I mean, they're swamped. I think that right now everything's going. But Roger and them are trying to recover a little time. When we get someone, the sisters just hired or is hiring someone.
Yeah.
I don't know if they actually hired them, but they interviewed.
Yeah.
So
it's still kind of start up.
It's half.
Right.
Our thing
going
with
Israel. Yeah.
The natural or the raw materials delivery spur is an interesting idea.
It is. It's very interesting. Yeah. I'll talk to Gary about that.
Especially if biomass comes in.
Yeah. He's really interested in invigorating railroad through Central Oregon.
Which they need to be. Yeah. It's a totally, it's a resource that should be used.
It shoots through town. It shoots through the central area, and it's like we don't get any benefit. We get all the inconvenience. We don't get any of the benefit.
Right. Which probably an improved thingy there.
Oh, that's a
intersection.
That could be ugly. What's your notation here?
Oh, that should have been shown as industrial.
Oh.
What is the crossing there? Is that just an act grade?
Yes.
Is there a warning light or any? Is there a gate?
That has the gates.
The arms. So, a project, if you were going to build a spur, it could be that they would want you to make that grid separated or do some other sort of improvement to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that. I got that.
Well, the only reason there's a spur out there right now is because they have to have a spur every so many miles.
Yeah.
The next closest one is Bend.
Right.
So that really was never built to accommodate anything other than a spur to pull one train off the track.
So that would be east of... There's a railroad east of... Is there a road for along that road?
Finley Butte and...
It doesn't say what this... It's just a railroad. The closest one is Silver...
Yeah. Silver Lake. Yeah. That's the only road. Just dirt. Yeah. They're not close there. Where it might make sense.
Okay.
I think we're in healthy supply. Just a few tweaks to make things.
How many towns have you visited so far?
Oh, let's see, Redmond, Sisters, Madras, and you guys, and Prineville.
Have they all told you they need more land, or some of them are saying they're okay?
The only city that feels like it needs more land is Madras.
And that is because of Asian Bee, just because so much of their land is airport lease land, and it's hard to...
Matters has very, very few acres that you can actually buy.
Yeah.
It's owned by the federal government
at airport,
and they let you lease.
And then they have another issue, which you guys are fortunate not to have, is Deborah was telling you about how you need to have your 20-year land supply. So you have something called an economic opportunities analysis that you guys did that was adopted as part of your comprehensive plan, and it demonstrated how much employment land you need for 20 years. Well, Madras has a big old hunk of land that's in their 20-year employment land bank that says, when you look at it, it says, oh, Madras has plenty of land. Totally unwilling property owner. They don't want to sell it. So it's sitting there, shown on their inventory as part of their industrial land supply, and it's not available. So there's an interesting quandary that we've been trying to figure out a way around. But you guys, you know, the fact
that... And if you go try to take it away, say, if you want some, well, if you don't want it to be industrial, downloading it back to ag land? Now you're into a taking.
Well, not so much, though. That is not a Measure 49.
That's right. Well, we talked.
It's
I
not.
I wonder about that.
It's
yeah.
not. Measure 49 only applies to residential. So they could do that, and I have actually talked to the city about doing that.
I suggested it. I said maybe just if you've had 10 years, you don't want to sell it, maybe
find another piece. So it's been challenging. We've actually stood around a map like this and tried to find another piece.
Fortunately, Lapine has the county owns a lot of it, and you've got enough people to sell land.
Yeah.
Are
right.
we done here?
Right.
I
you
think
know,
so.
The whole key to the industrial
do you want to
park. The whole key to the industrial park and Rick. Has right on the program is aggressive merchandising.
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't aggressively merchandise it, they'll never sell.
Right. Yeah.
And the city
and
council,
the right plan.
They're willing to allow tax credits and stuff too.
We have an enterprise zone.
Is all of your industrial land in an enterprise zone?
I believe so.
Most of it. Yeah.
They're pretty progressive on those tax benefits. Kind of just bring it to us and we'll.
I don't know.
Let it go.
Yeah, it's in the enterprise zone, so there's a system you go through. I don't know, Karen, it's all of it. I mean, but I my guess is.
Oh,
yeah.
Because Roger Lee and I were working on.
And do you have any certified sites?
No.
So would that help to have a certification?
When I say no, again, I think there's no sign on one.
Yeah. So what that means is that the state has worked with the city or the landowner to make the site closer to shovel ready.
We could do that. You know, that wouldn't be back here because one thing about it, with the six traffic signal coming in on first, there actually is no issues.
Yeah.
We got the water. We got the roads. It just needs a certification.
Yeah. And it's a process. So what it does is it takes the property through all of the most environmental loophole, not loopholes.
It's like pre-approved.
It's like pre-approved, right. And it means that if someone was interested in it, they could walk in the door, get their permits, and maybe be ready to go within, I think 180 days is the certification.
You're not going to have to go through zone change.
You're not going to change the zone. You're not going to have to get a DEQ permit because there's something nasty in the ground, all that stuff. You've got
and
no
the
endangered,
website of certified sites.
The endangered species.
There's no endangered species, and So so I will ask about that too. If there's
how well that program actually works.
You know,
statewide, is it?
I think EDCO likes it because it's its marketing tool.
Yeah.
I don't know how really effective it's been.
Right.
But they keep their binders of certified sites, and cities will say, we have X number of certified sites, and it sounds good.
We should have one.
It doesn't sound like getting certified would be a big challenge for you guys.
Could be a big selling point, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will ask Clark Jackson about that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so does that help you?
It's very helpful. So
we'll get that map corrected.
My
for
three
you.
Big takeaways are that you do have one parcel where a small project, the looping for fire flow, would make that property much more attractive. We want to explore whether or not there's something that we could do maybe around the railroad spur, and look at site certification maybe for one of those properties. But other than that, you guys are in good shape. You need an EDCO person to come market your property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rick's working on that. Yeah. I think that's the exact perfect answer.
Really. Yeah, you just have to raise your awareness.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
And when you guys redo your city website, that could be a great page as well.
Oh, yeah.
So it comes up on spider search.
Is existing buildings that are just available.
Yeah,
that's
a
big issue.
It is a big issue. And I was either talking to Clark or someone at IDCO right now saying that there's a shortage of industrial buildings that are available.
Yeah, because I find it's harder for communities to compete sometimes, especially kind of spur of the moment. You don't have, Prineville's lucky, because they have old abandoned mills. Mm-hmm. And with that came a lot of manufacturing where they left buildings behind.
Yeah.
And you can go in and kind of quickly rent. Well, in the downturn, Redmond ended up with quite a few vacant buildings.
Yeah.
And Ben did too back in some of the newer industrial park back there, Brunson and all of that.
Brunson, you bet.
But we don't have. Because we're newer, and you either just have some log yards and stuff like that. As far as a 20,000 square foot industrial metal building that's vacant, that a person could come in and rent for 10 cents a foot,
it
doesn't exist.
What do you think if you had one, you could rent it?
An incubator building?
Yeah.
I love incubator buildings, yes.
Okay. I'm going to write it down. I have no idea. At this point, it's very unclear to us what this money is going to be, what it's going to be usable for.
You know why I'd like to get an incubator building in Lapine is, and it could be small again, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 square feet, and you had some 1,000 square foot, maybe a couple thousand square foot, and we could... it would be to transition people from residences.
Yeah.
The problem we have going on here, being unincorporated, that every business that in the other towns very well may end up in an industrial park has been allowed to be put at home.
Right, right.
And so if you have it, and it's cost, ultimately that's why.
Oh,
if you end up with an incubator building, and you could literally take a 1,000 square foot little spot, say for the next year or two, we'll rent this to you for $200 a month.
Yeah. Right.
Because they're at home, partly because it's convenient, but it's cost. At the end of the day, they'll move into a nice new building. And then the idea is then you kind of slowly up their rent. They can only stay X amount of years.
Yeah.
Then they move out, someone else comes in. That's the concept.
Yeah, because they want to grow.
So we transition people from all these, because there's a lot of businesses out there.
Yes. That would be an interesting
service
proposal
and repair
to put together, because I think you could be doing a couple of things. You could be satisfying, you could be solving a problem that you got with code enforcement and those sorts of things and neighborhood compatibility, at the same time starting to get some life into your industrial district.
Yeah.
I'm,
so that's something I would think would be worth.
Yeah, I'll talk
there's to some people that don't like that at all.
Yeah. Well, it's a risk. You're spending money on a building that could sit empty, but it's... going to be a low risk.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea.
Roll up door, steel building, shed roof, slab.
$50 a square foot, I built one.
Yep.
I own one.
Mezzanine office.
And bathroom, ADA bathroom, they're 1,800 square feet. I got six units. And
is that a mattress?
Yeah, we're 10,000 square feet. And we spent, $450,000, put 30 in the lot. We bought 3 acres, but we border the people that won't sell.
Right.
That 3 acres got sold.
Oh, okay. I know where that
but,
is. Yes.
The Eagle. We're the Eagle.
Yeah.
And I've been full. We've had lower rents, but I haven't had a vacancy since we opened.
Well, if the city built the building, you would want to keep the rents low artificially, but you might have a limited tenant agreement, 3 years, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Was that a steel building or?
Yeah, steel. Your typical steel sprinkling system,
right.
And then you put the wainscoting and brick up, right below the windows, go around it, put a little wood in the front, so kind of what I think a little bit where Ziegler's Auto Repair, kind of the concept is, that's almost what it is. You get the roll-up door. In his case, he's got a couple of units there, but
You got some parking.
You got a little parking. Yeah. You come in, and if you could get a grant, see, to build them, then you can go rent them. Cheap.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
Well, and also you could target certain industries that you would like to bring into the area.
Yeah.
You know?
But Russell won, Vic, we talked with Liggy Money at one point when I was here before about using that to maybe go back and do a small building. And there was some support for that because they had a couple $300,000 in the bank.
I love the idea of getting some of the home occupations in a more visible place, starting to aggregate them, starting to get a little liveliness into the...
Terrebonne's the same because it's unincorporated.
Right.
It's not unique to Lapine.
Right.
When you're unincorporated, these businesses pop up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are naturally entrepreneurial. They're going to do that.
Yeah.
Well, if credits come back for energy, market some of your BLM land for solar, you have some income coming in, a good stream, you could fund it. But then, you know, it's work. Okay,
thanks.
So.
That was great.
That was fun.
That was good.
Good idea.
Well, see ya. We want to thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sure.
You give me a lot of insight, you know.
Well, and if you ever get
to
the point where you use up all your industrial land, I'll help you do an urban growth boundary.
Oh my God, already?
I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
Give me a corn.
Thank you again. We really appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure.
Okay, item number 8 under other matters. I have one question. And Deborah and Mr. Allen. Our primary function, and correct me if this is wrong, is land use issues.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
Okay. Will you explain to me just exactly what we're supposed to do with land use issues?
The short-term issues and long-term issues. The comprehensive plan, the big policy document that guides the growth of the city, that are the expressions of what the community wants to become over the next 20 years, or what we call the planning horizon. You are the keepers of that. You are responsible for reviewing, updating, and making sure that those policies are implemented through your codes. Those are the day-to-day things, the zoning ordinance, the subdivision ordinance. So when an application comes to you, you are responsible to make sure that the criteria in those codes are met when somebody proposes development in the city, or a text amendment, or plan amendment, etc. What's going to happen is the big stuff will come to you. The day-to-day stuff, like a sign permit or administrative things that keep things flowing, like a lot line adjustment, that's administrative. So somebody like me will process that so things don't get, you know, bunged up or hung up or take too long, because you want business to get stuff through quickly. But the bigger stuff, let's say you get a 100-lot subdivision, that's your job, is to look at that, make sure the criteria are met. Staff helps you by providing findings or a staff report so that you can evaluate whether those criteria actually have been met in the proper way. Okay, so let's say there's something bigger. Let's say somebody comes in and says, my property's zoned wrong. I want that changed. So I'm going to apply to amend your plan, and I want a new zone put in its place. That's a huge thing, because just like what Karen was talking about, does it affect your inventories? Is it too much land? Those are the kinds of things that require policy decision making that you're responsible for. So the day-to-day stuff is typically limited to you as judges looking at things from a quasi-judicial perspective. There are always appeal rights. And then a lot of times for the policy work, and most of the time, you'll be making recommendations to the city council. So you've got day-to-day stuff and then long-range planning stuff. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Deb, now, Karen, can you tell me if this is not you planning gurus? The other side, especially in a small town, aspire to true in big towns, is I think that you need to be the eyes and the ears of, in other words, she's talking more about you have an application and you're in quasi-judicial, you're going to be ruling or you're going to have all that. But I believe that especially here where our comp plans are new and all this stuff, a lot of it is you're the eyes and the ears in the community.
Good point.
For making sure that A, maybe rules are followed, and then how aggressive do you fall, because, you know, rules are out there and all of that. I really look to you, and I think the council would look to you, along that line in a smaller town, especially when we're new. We have yet to enforce one of our own rules. That's coming. And there's pitfalls, pitfalls and other things. We need advocates out there when we go to take them on, because it's easy to get the bar crowd to say, well, that dumb city is doing X, or you're not letting me do Y. And so I really see that's where I, as a manager, needs the help, and the council needs the help, is, you know, how come, what's going on over here, and why are these things? And because you're not going to get a lot of applications that are going to come here too often that require a bunch of things, most likely in the next year or so.
Yeah,
yeah, you could, but you haven't had any. So I don't know. Is that an appropriate?
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is a kind of on this inspirational end of it. You know about the statewide planning goals, right? The 19 planning goals. Goal number one is public involvement. And in that statute that describes how we're supposed to enforce that, it says that every community has to have a citizen involvement committee. And that's you guys. In the city of Lapine's comprehensive plan, you guys are designated as the public face. So what Rick said is perfect. You know, your job is to understand the community and bring that understanding to the land use arena.
There is a fun one coming your way too. We've got a cul-de-sac bulb that's been extended with the street that wraps around, and the wings of the cul-de-sac, the little arced areas, we have a customer who wants to vacate that and landscape it because it's no longer needed and doesn't need to be maintained by the city. And they'd put in curbs and all the things that are appropriate to make it a street, you know, with a long line and drainage. Well, we worked with the county, and the county said, we have to be involved. And then they looked in it closer and found out that the statute says, in one little discrete area, the county can't vacate anything inside the city. So the city has to have a process to do that. Well, we don't have a vacation process in place. What are we going to do? We'll just follow state statute very cleanly. We'll put a process in place that's pretty easy to do, and it requires your review and then a recommendation to the council, because they have the ultimate authority on vacations. So that one's going to be coming to you. And then that's a real life one that, you know, benefits the city by reducing maintenance costs, helps the property owner, and improves landscaping in a particular area, so you get some livability boost there too. Less pavement.
Do you know when that's coming up?
I got to draft the code for Rick, and then the application can be made, so I don't know, 2-3 months. You know, it's not a huge rush.
We're not scheduled to have meetings in July and August.
Yeah, no,
and that's fine. Give me time to whip it up.
Unless something really comes up.
Yeah.
And we're going to leave that up to Patty. If something happens, particularly if we get 2 or 3 applications for our vacant seat, we'd like to act on it right away. So if that happens, or Deborah, if you think it,
yep,
we can have. But right now, we're canceled for July and August unless something else happens.
Good move.
Now, Mr. Allen, can you give me a one paragraph? What's happening with the smokehouse guy in Cagle?
You know, what he did, just going to be missed walking through a couple. We might as well just hit on the ones, because that's what you're here for. Yes, the bar, restaurant, pizza parlor, former steakhouse that's all been gutted down here.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I took photos, sent that to the county. Their response was, well, they'd come in and talk to them, and they knew that they have to get permits and things. Not quite sure. But, you know, it's gutted down to the 2x4s inside. And then there's some pipes outside. Looks like they poured a new overhang at the far end of the building with a little concrete slab. So I'm not sure if the remodel was going. Now you'll notice there's nothing going.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just try to find out what's going on with them. And you know, Lapine as a community is going to have to realize that, and Steve was trying to get that across in his way of that. But it's that you do have to follow some rules. And it's really hard to you know, take a range course and break them. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting process. So then I sent out, and once I, if I ever get, because I'm just not going to go through a bunch of, keep hitting on names, I need to get you guys into an email block so I bookmark so I can just send to you. But I had, and of course Doug sees him some now because of his wife, but I had a house over on Skidgel in Kegel that the neighbor called, so I went down, and there's just an abandoned trailer house next door. It's got crap all over, you know, and no one should have to live next to this stuff. I believe it, and I would look any landowner in the eye and say, I'm sorry, that's not okay. You should not have to put up with that as a neighbor. Now, it's abandoned, so we sent a letter. Did we get it signed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she got it. So I made up a letter. And sent that, and we sent certified and then uncertified to make sure that we sent the uncertified first, I think is how we did it.
Certified
first, because if they got the uncertified, then they don't answer the certified, because they already know the content. And so, and it kind of said, hey, you know, you're the property owner, and at some point these codes are going to come after you, and it can include fines and penalties and all kinds of stuff. Ultimately, when we get a nuisance abatement ordinance, I have Jeremy starting to work on that. I got some of the drafts that have been around. But that's, you know, ultimately we can go in and clean them up and build, lien the property.
Right.
And so, you know, that kind of thing. And so then you get over to the smokehouse, which is on Doe Lane. And there's a gentleman that has been doing, he started out making sausage in his house with his own, I suppose, deer and elk and things. And then, of course, a neighbor tasted the sausage, and like summer sausage, and then they liked it. And so then they said, well, why don't you make me some? And then they bring their deer over. And then the wife said, we're moving this out of the kitchen. And a building at some point, and I don't know where in this life of all of this, there is a building, a 750 square foot building.
That appeared.
So that has, the county has said that did just appear. It's never been inspected, and they had no knowledge of it. They think there's some other buildings. They did an aerial, and they say they noticed some changes, and he says it's because the trees have been trimmed. They were always there. There's now a newfound second septic tank that here about 3 weeks ago was discovered right next to the new building. So it just happens to be right there. That all works nice. And so they now have a walk-in cooler inside the 750-foot building, and they have been in the newspaper with the Lapine newspaper and the chamber advertising this business of taking in deer and elk, holding them for people that hunt in the cooler, and also cutting up, making sausage, and it would require a delivery once a week of a delivery truck bringing in the other stuff you mix with sausage, because elk and deer, you don't just do it straight. And then also then the hides and the bones would be in barrels. Originally they were going to be placed outside next to the barn, and the Redmond tallow, or someone would come down once a week and take that away. And I then questioned, this is a home occupation, incidental to living. So we've been working for a month process on that, and where that's going to end up, we don't know. Now the gentleman's actually here today, sat right here, and what I've told him is that you know, there's rules and there's laws, and that residential subdivisions are in fact residential subdivisions, and that we, in our job, is to make sure that anything that goes on there meets that. And you know, at some point you are a commercial business, and therefore it needs to be an industrial park. And when you're doing retail sales of sausage, selling it to customers, and he is, and he says that, and he's in cutting or taking meat from other people and making sausage for them, and they take it. And 25 pounds got out to a food booth. He didn't know it was going to a food booth, so the Department of Ag shut him down. The DEQ and the county will not allow him to use this newfound septic system because the blood and things is too strong to go in with our, you know, issues we have, nitrate issues and everything. So they've now said that if he put in a 1,500 gallon holding tank that's underground, then it's monitored with a level when it's full, then it gives some alarm, and then you have a contract with a certified pumping company that automatically has to come do it whenever it gets full. And then he has a smoke house with this, but that's outside, and they said today that that has to be in a building.
Right.
So I'm not sure if a building will go around that or not. So those are the kind of things.
This was permitted.
Well, nothing.
You know. Nothing. You just did
it. So is this a home occupation? That's, you know, I think it's worth a review and a question.
Well, there is. You want to establish a precedent to it. Yeah.
So what's your.
Well,
we don't know where it'll go. But.
We're asking him to be honest and forthright and tell us exactly what he's doing, his program and his plan. We'll evaluate that and see where it fits in the code. And if he wants to proceed with a land use permit or some sort of land use process, then he would have to be limited to a certain production threshold. The problem is, every time we've asked a question, the answers have been all over the place. And because he's done illegal work out there that would support a much larger situation and commercial production, he really is not incidental to a residential use. He says he's got all the neighbors signing letters that he's great and they love him, but our job as planning commissioners and as planners and as the city is to make sure that we're protecting people in the residential zone, not just a few people who say yes today. We have to make sure that things are consistent because we don't want somebody doing something that makes living in that neighborhood a nightmare. And we just can't do that. Constant smoke, having barrels of offal and extra body parts, whatever he's doing, very hard to control unless you have a very strict program. Home occupations are supposed to be not noticeable from the outside of the building. If you've got smoke, you've got noise, you've got refuse and garbage and the nastiest kind of garbage, and then polluting your ground with perhaps an illegal connection, it just spells trouble.
Well, the reason I asked you, because I have people asking me, if he can do it, why can't I do it? I have one man who lives in a single family residential zone piece of property. He's not in Cable, by the way. He wants to open a feed store in his garage. He says, well, if he can do it, I can do it.
So see, going forward, you know, you're always going to get that because it's kind of like we're now. You've got all that stuff that's out there, and we can slowly work on some of it, some grandfathered, whatever. But I looked at this is today moving forward, and we need to say this needs reviewed. Mm-hmm. This needs a set of conditions if it's going to be there. If it's five trips a day, and if there's a year or two from now there's eight, that is a violation. If it's I have no employees, that's okay. When I have one employee, I have now no longer. But the problem we were heading down, everything was kind of vague. Well, I have someone come in and help that cuts up meat. Well, then I'm not going to cut up meat, and there is no employee. Well, wait a second.
Yeah.
You are. So I just want to make sure that it's all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. This is what, if in fact it's an allowable use. That's if it's allowable. That is very set because he will sell the property, someone else buys it, someone else does it. You come and go, I come and go. And then the city has to spend the money 5 years from now in the code enforcement. See? And so we want to make sure right out of the gate, and I think partly this is also food. People eat. This is a different, you're eating this. So it's got a lot of the things with the groundwater and all the other issues. And I think it does matter. Very nice man. And he you know, he likes this, it's a hobby, he enjoys making it. But he did build a building without a building permit.
So you say he's a very nice man, he wasn't nice to me. Well, he's calling me on the phone at home. That's how he got a hold of you, because I got tired of hearing him. I gave him your phone number.
Yeah, well.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. The county's working on it. Yeah. And they've told him to fill out a kind of a new application with more specifics, and then we'll see where it goes.
Yep, we'll work with the county on what they call a declaratory ruling to analyze the situation and provide some guidance on whether it fits or it doesn't fit, or what the rules would be if he changed things. And then he'll have a choice of where he applies.
Gravel roads. I keep trying to make the point that we've spent a lot of money over there, but the people hate the dust. And I kind of explained to him today was, you know, it's at three, he says five trips, but even if it's three or four, but there's 10 or 20 people over there running businesses. And if each of them has two or three trips, and you have to go twice if you come and go, that's a lot of dust.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to the neighbors who have bought to retire there, mm-hmm. to live there with their families, or vacation there. So, you know, we'll get some pushback on, depending if where this all heads.
Where are we on a code enforcement officer anyway?
But we don't have a code to enforce, so we don't need a code enforcement officer.
When will we have codes to enforce?
Hopefully, well, two things.
Fall.
Probably by January, would be my guess, but we will have codes. But we do not have the nuisance. Most of the stuff we're talking about, in a lot of cases, this would be more land. We would be okay on this one.
Yeah.
But with the junk and all that other stuff, that's nuisance ordinances. It's too many car bodies in this, you know, that kind of stuff, which is really a lot of the cleanup stuff. And that we actually don't have one, which I didn't know till last week.
Yeah.
We do not have a nuisance abatement ordinance.
Not yet. It's part of the bigger city code outside of land use. No, it's something that has to go in that gives the city control to do certain things.
Because see, what I think got confusing, even myself, because I wasn't paying that much attention because I wasn't here, but I did follow things. But they approved, Jeremy and them back, and you come to council, they approved the resolution or an ordinance that would allow how you can find someone, how you can do the process. In other words, if you go up to Justin's place and you're going to cite him, how it all works.
Yeah.
That got approved. And I just think people are thinking, and like I said, if this is a home occupation, you would have rules on that.
Right.
But as far as running around worrying about a lot of this other stuff, which is probably the primary, is kind of nuisance stuff. It's car bodies and camp trailers and people living in stuff. And so we need to get one. And I just here, was it last week, I started emailing Deborah and Jeremy and said, look, let's get one. Every other city has one. I'd say, you know, we too often always want to, you know, you have to just reinvent the wheel. Take two or three examples in Central Oregon and, you know, and then have a couple town halls. You'll get some pushback. Because it's real interesting when I was going through the one that Jeremy sent, and it was from...
We used a couple cities.
But
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things. Sometimes it affects some of you, and you got to be careful. I mean, you know, you got to be understanding that, and you also, you know, you can read a lot into it.
Well, just like on the demo thing, if you think about that as a public health and safety issue, if it becomes an attractive nuisance because the person rips it out and now kids are playing in it and it's got bare wires. Okay, well, let's say we have some general codes that the city can enforce that there shall be no demolition without a city permit. Does it stop it? Does it help control it? Does it help guide what that person does? You can set up fines if they don't do it correctly, and those fines go to rehabilitate and fence that off so nobody gets hurt.
You know, cars. Cars are a huge one. And you read it, and I thought, oh, I started looking at it. You know, it's and this is what most cities have. It's unregistered. Well, then everyone tends to start thinking, I got a couple of those at my house. Well, you know, so then you say, well, no, that's too strict. So, you know, you can have two unregistered cars, you know, That
sounds like the chickens.
You know, somebody will say, well, that's what it is. It is the chickens thing. So,
not the chickens.
You know, how many, or the all cars need to be stored inside if they're not registered. You know, you could have an antique that you put. So can everyone have one unregistered car? A lot of cities, if it's unregistered. If it's under repair, how long can it sit on blocks? And if you get too vague about it, you won't win in court. Because ultimately it has to go to a court if they push.
So, well, we had something about fencing, about junkyards and...
Yeah, we have that in our code, in the zoning ordinance.
Okay.
But this enforcement and code abatement and or nuisance abatement is more of something that if you had no planning at all, the city would still need to run the city. And so it's in your code of ordinances, but it's separate from your land use stuff. It gives the city powers.
There are several people that have home mechanic businesses, and then you've got cars, and you've got to be
And then again, some of that you pass it, but you don't run around looking for the person that's got. You start with the person. First of all, if they're already there, there's a lot of grandfathering, and you can kind of play that. It's the person that's got 50 cars, where Babylon's one or two.
Or a public health
and
safety.
Or where the complaints come in. If it's right in the middle of a subdivision where you are, one or two cars is an issue. If I've got a 5-acre lot, one or two cars is not an issue. And it's kind of like, you can get a ticket 56 miles an hour, but one hasn't been written in a long time.
Well, I do know that most people that I know that moved into this area is to get away from the CCNRs, And so they don't want too much restriction because that's
But you're in a city. That goes back. That's why that's why I made the point. We got the industrial land. Some people don't want to move their companies here because of the junk.
Right.
So that's where I'm really interested in where Lapine wants to go. Because we're going to make all these rules, we do all these things. When it comes time to start enforcing them, and you're right, are we saying that because people came to Lapine to avoid rules, they can do what they want?
I think that frame of mind's kind of going to the wayside. I think we're getting new ideas in. I think 20 years ago, that was probably true, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But I don't think it is today as much.
If that was true.
Still a lot of old timers out there that feel that way. But
why would they vote to incorporate if that was true?
I think that's a good point. When you voted to incorporate, you voted that you're going to have a higher set of rules to follow. That comes with it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that the people here said that we had, if they were going to vote for the corporation, that what the city had to do was clean up the mess.
That was
in every public forum.
Yes.
Every town hall meeting, we need to clean the place up.
Deborah, can you ask, because I was going to look it up on the internet, because I couldn't remember, maybe you know too, but is there a state law or is it a county ordinance? What is the rules on living, call it permanently living in a camp trailer on property, visiting? What can you live in a camp trailer?
It has to do with definitions of a dwelling.
Right.
And what's allowed on a property, and typically when you have something temporary like that, it's not allowed after a certain period of time. And there are statutes and rules that are set up to control that.
Would you want me to send that to you? Does the county have a rule on that, or is there state laws on that?
The county has rules on definitions of dwellings and uses that are allowed on residential lots.
And it comes back to it's a health and human safety issue. If you're living in a facility that isn't hooked up to water and sewer or a septic system, then you have a limited stay requirement. I think that goes back to health and human safety.
But I didn't know in a residential subdivision, can you live in a camp trailer as your permanent residence?
No. Answer's no.
What if you hooked it to sewer and water? Can you live in a 12? Literally, when you tow behind your pickup.
I don't think so. There are some HUD requirements with stickers on mobile homes that are required, doesn't apply to RVs.
Because that's another high complaint that I get, and Kegel.
How many do you have people living
there's
in?
There's several. And they tend to be folks that people don't, they're troublemakers. And there's like one lot, and I have pictures from when I was here before. Well, then I got here, there was a note from bunch of neighbors, and I knew exactly. I didn't even have to drive out there. I knew what they were talking because the address, I remember it. So I went out there, and there they are, these two or three camp trailers lined up in a row. They pulled the back one out, actually. Now I only saw two the other day, but, you know, then what really hit it home, and I just heard today that Doug had already seen it, but there, right on Huntington and Cagle, there's a guy that's got a camp trailer in the right-of-way underneath the power line. So I know he's on public property. But he's just, I mean, I thought he was there clearing his lot. I mean, he has a lot there. You can see he's living up trees. You know, so I thought he was there for the weekend or something. He had a motorcycle, and then there's a kayak actually on the roof of a van. Then all over on the side of Cagle, I saw the trailer looked like a snowmobile trailer, type thing, backed in. And so it piqued my interest because I saw a lot of stuff back in the trees.
Oh.
And I thought, what is back in there? So I start looking, and it looks like someone's unloaded their house. Not in a building. I mean, unloaded the house.
You mean household goods?
Well, like I say, it looked kind of like it to me, and I was like, what are these people? I mean, they've got the couch out there.
He's living in there.
Yeah, so.
He's living in that Volkswagen van.
He's got a camp trailer in front of the van.
And the camp trailer's on the street. And he's got a big fire pit, and a bunch of chairs and tables and lanterns.
I do know Deschutes County Code.
He's having a great time.
Has a 30-day, you can only stay in a camper for 30 days at a time. And you have to move it.
And so. this is in the city, but they, again, they fall currently today, you can say they fall to the county code.
Yeah.
But I went and stopped to talk to the guy. He just bought it, he says. And the fact that for sale sign was in the back of their pickup, like they'd taken it down. 3 acres, it's on the corner of Cagle and Huntington. Probably a foreclosure, I don't know. And he had California plates, and he was a nice enough person, and they looked like, I mean, their rigs were nicer, they weren't, you know, they didn't get towed in there. But I asked him, I said, so...
Is he building?
What are you doing? He says, he's gonna build.
Oh.
So then I said, well, we'll kind of work down that. Well, he says he checked into sanitation, and he's not in the city, he said. I said,
Cagle is.
I said, hey, just him saying it.
Yeah.
You know, they can say anything they want. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll check on that. And
I'll get you the rules on it.
So then he said, now, I don't know that I'm going to rush the house or something. And I thought, okay, here again, it's a little bit like the smokehouse. I think we have to start drawing the line. This is a property that's never had it. And I can see where this is headed. This camp trailer is going back in there once he clears it all out. That camp trailer is going back in those trees, and even if he hooks to a sewer or gets a septic. And if he's going to do a home, he has to apply for a home permit, and then if he's going to build it, you can take a year, then you can get an extension. But you don't get to just move in and hook to a sewer. He needs to go apply for a house permit.
Yeah, he could put a manufactured home on there.
Oh.
We planned on doing that. We moved in, we came up here in the 1st of May and didn't get in until the 1st of November.
If they're truly building and applying and doing all of it, I don't care if he stays in it for a year.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't, that's the thing. And so it's these camp trailers, and they're actually, if you drive those roads slow over there, that's the key, slow. And look through the trees and you look at the stuff you see, and hoses going out to camp trailers. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed today when I was out there, you know, the pink flamingo on the porch of the camp trailer and the lawn chair sitting there leads you to believe
pink flamingo for sure
that somebody's living.
Everybody needs one of those.
It's for sure.
And
it's
so I think you have to systematically decide how are you going to work on cable. So you have to just kind of start. I'm thinking
education.
People living in camp trailers.
Yep.
First, the abandoned junk places that are abandoned, absentee owners that have allowed vandals to come in, clean those, start cleaning those, because then no one lives there. And then do the camp trailers, who are generally often on vacated land or absentee. They don't own the land, these people, generally with the camp trailers. So, you know, you just kind of systematically start through this and work on getting some of these. But that's why I said, I need your eyes and ears. What do you want?
Yeah.
What do you guys think about all this? Is that stuff you think is important or not important?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely important. Mm-hmm. But you're right, you have to have a line where you start. And that word will get out too.
Yeah.
To the public saying, geez, they're cracking down on it. We can't put a trailer on that, you know, so on and so forth. But it's got to start someplace.
I mean, if he's going to build a home in there, well, then there's no problem, as far as I can see, with him living in that camp trailer where he's building a home.
Oh, definitely.
As long as it doesn't take 5 years.
Well, there's laws on all that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to, what I say, right, there's a law that you actually have to apply.
And who's going to pick up all those trees he's got piled up alongside the road? Those are all his. I mean, he's got four great big piles of trees that he's pulled out of there. I don't think Mike's going to pick them up. Mike's coming down Cagle. He's almost done with the tree work over there. I don't think he'll pick them up because he didn't cut them down.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Really, there's a lot. That's kind of what I noticed today out at your carver guy out there that carves the items. Well, when you go home tonight, you just look, and I was noticing about halfway, what I'm going to do is go take, I wish I'd done it when I was here before, I need to take photos of that so you have a base, because it's changing, and I don't think people know.
Changing
just
to
stuff
morphing?
In, just more stuff in there and everything.
Well, he's started a little fence.
He started that little fence. Well,
but
what he's done is
he's moved
down to the south. He used to always, have that the couple of lots toward the south end were not, you know, a few pieces of wood and some junk. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go look, again, must drive slow. This can't be a 70-mile-an-hour drive-by.
Yeah.
You go and you look. That whole thing, right up to the fence of the next property now, is full.
Yeah.
Okay, then today I saw him out there with a drill. The guy was inside, and it was like he's building a building.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of like these little buildings he does are kind of like a fake,
yeah,
western front or something. But this is in the middle of the property, not up where he's always had his stuff. This is out in the middle. And he had his drill and he was in there working, and I thought, now what is this?
Yeah.
And then behind it there's three camp trailers that people are living in.
He's building a whole village.
So
his own city within a city.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do? None of it's permitted. You can't build any bigger than what she had, 200 square feet. This thing's bigger than 200 square feet.
Yeah.
Is it a structure?
20.
What is he building?
Yeah.
Well, so, doesn't he have to get a permit or something from the
county
for
that? I mean, it's having the housing there is not allowed. I mean, that's just
the
way it is.
Come. See, they're kind of, he's still code enforcement. He's not going to come get into that stuff.
Not unless there's raw sewage on the ground.
That's why we need, a lot of that is our nuisance abatement there. That's where junk debris stacked. You know, all of that. That's why we need that ordinance.
Yeah.
And you can go in and start.
Well, you know what? Sometime we need to give Gordy our thanks for what he did to the trailer park. I don't know who put a fire under his butt, but he cleaned that place up, tore that building down. He's putting up a fence that's being painted. A lot of those old ratty trailers he's hauled out of there. He's doing a good job of that. Now, I'm not sure who sparked him into it. And I'm sure it wasn't easy.
It wasn't legal either.
you don't know all what was going on in there.
Well, the asbestos stuff was the biggest thing.
Well, you know, he...
I know.
That
ladies go and make money, okay? Let's put it
I looked at it today and it does look better.
Yes, it does.
And so he gets kudos for that. He puts some little bushes underneath it and all that. So actually, that's a good thing. But just an example, when you go by, look, and this is something that is not legal, that he's got his Gordy's sign, Gordy's restaurant sign there. In our codes, you can't advertise off site.
No.
Can you?
Nope. Yeah, the feds have ruled on that. As long as a person on their property is meeting the time, manner, and place and size of a sign, we don't care what it says, unless it's obscene. And then there were rules on that.
I'm saying the billboard law didn't let you do that.
No, you can do that. Yeah, for city signs. Billboards are controlled differently, but if you have a property, a commercial property, and you want your signage to advertise your neighbor's Chinese restaurant, you can do that.
It's
federally protected.
Find out and meet some kind of
criteria. Yeah, they do. It's all changed pretty in the last couple of years. So.
Yeah, because I know I was looking at that.
Which is why we were conservative about what size of signs were going to be allowed, because if they can't be regulated on content, then, you know, we want to be conservative.
Yeah.
That building, the steakhouse, the Mystique, whatever, there's no problem with asbestos on that one, is there?
Fine.
That you know of?
Yeah. I think that'll be fine. I think they'll work their way through it. They'll get their permits, and that'll ultimately, if they get that brew pub, it'll be good. And everybody will come out fine. I think those guys will do it right. They'll get their permits.
Okay. So you good cutting us loose?
What?
Are you good cutting Karen and I loose? We shared a ride, so I don't
want to...
don't want to overstay.
You want to wrap it up?
We are. I'll let you just speak. My last comment will be right here. We are going to be
putting
out.
Let's move on. Kitty, you got a question you said you might have earlier?
No.
Anything? Comment?
I did have a question in my mind on vacating roads, but Deborah answered that for me. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
What was that?
We're going to be putting out a RFQ, RFP, private action RFQ for a planning services. Deb's contract expired a long time ago. And really, she was hired really when we were doing the, before I got here, and they were building the comp plan and all of it. What we want to do now is transition into kind of more, now it's maintenance and planning services. In other words, for us to take on codes and to take on planning, we need to have someone under contract, staff planning commission, and then also more on an hourly basis based on application driven. You might have one a week, you might have one a month, you may have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, and just like we did with our attorney and all that, you have to audit, you name it. So we are going to put out a thing so people can respond. We obviously would expect Deborah to. And we're looking at 3 to 5 years. So then you get continuity. That person that gets elected, they will be your, basically your planning director, your contract planning director, community development director, whatever.
Well, those are lofty titles, but we just need
our
a planner.
and then they would be, and you'll know how much we're paying. Are we paying travel time? Are we not? All those things, you know, right, we've got to get nailed down. And then we'll start working on getting our planning kind of department up, and we have to come up with planning fees. Now, you can't start a planning department if you don't know what you're going to charge.
True.
It's as basic as when Justin walks in and wants to put a deck in his backyard or something, we have to know, well, do you have a form for him to put his name and address and all that? And are you a landowner? Are you a renter? What's the value of it? Then you got to come up with a fee and all of that. So I think we were a little premature before wanting to hire code enforcement officers and things and actually putting them on payroll when you couldn't.
It's only human nature. I mean, we've been talking about this since 06. And, you know, it's only human nature. We want to get stuff done.
So I think before, by January, my goal is that by January, we would have, you know, we'll have the planning person picked in a couple months. And then we'll, you know, be rolling. And in the meantime, we'll be doing stuff. But we'll, you know. And then you also have to give people notice. You can't just have it finished on the 10th of November and say we're starting it in here 2 weeks later. I mean, the county needs notice. We need to have an orderly transition. We need the public to know you start coming here. So I'd say January 1st would be a nice, give us 6 months.
Right. We'll hold open houses and work sessions because that's really important to ease people into it. They'll want to know, and we'll have forms available, and hopefully the website will have, you know, links to those things to make it easy. People can do a lot of stuff from home.
Okay.
We'll go on to item number 9. Commissioner comments. Justin, anything?
Nope, no comments.
No?
I'm good.
You're good? Okay, I'm good too, except for we hope you put in for the job.
Oh, I will.
And continue on with us because you've done a great job for us.
Well, thank you.
Take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? We're done. Oh, I get to do this.
One more time. You know, he kind of scares me how much he enjoys pounding.
Yeah.
I do.
Did you get work?
Takes me back. My
thanks
childhood.
For coming. Just now.
Unless something
major comes up.
Yeah, if something comes up and
you want to. I'm going to give these to Patty to hold for us.
Yes. Actually, I will let her upstairs. We're waiting.
Is that okay?
Down. Yeah.
You know, what I'm doing is
perfect. Yep. Yeah, this map I want to
put that
up. Yeah,
I'm taking that off.
I do. Well, it's very rare that
it
gets me.
Oh, the case. That's the drug dealer's dream.
Yeah.